Rossi. Is he going to get up the inside of turn 14 on the brakes? The first gear corner. Valentino
Rossi. Touch.
And they touch, but Rossi leads the way. The crowd go wild.
Hello and welcome to Motopod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 508 for Wednesday, the 14th of September, 2016. My name is Martin Darlington. I'm now back in Qatar and having had a lovely month off. And with me, all the way from California, is Skyler Vicroy.
Hey, how's it going?
Yeah, really good, really good. Fantastic weekend of racing. Didn't manage to catch it all. I saw all the MotoGP and Moto2 and Moto3, but BSB unfortunately passed me by. But we're aware what happened, so we can talk about it. It was basically the Leon Haslam weekend. Oh, spoiler alert. new donators and subscribers, if you have donated or subscribed in the last week, I'm afraid we've all been dashing around with real life stuff, and we haven't actually got the updated list, so that will be covered next week. Don't worry, you will get a shout out, and you do have our great appreciation. Straight into news.
Yeah, so KTM has confirmed that their Moto2 project that we've all been aware of, but is now official, and their riders are going to be Binder and Oliveira, which is a great combination. Their suspension is going to be WP, and they're actually going to run the trellis frame just like the rest of their Moto2 and GP bikes, and that's going to leave KTM with a streamlined way into their MotoGP program from Moto3, actually from the SEV all the way up to their MotoGP program. So that'll be good for bringing the young talent aboard.
Absolutely. I mean, Binder's a very obvious one. He has been the standout talent in Moto3 this year, as we'll come on to. Oliveira is interesting. Good rider and, you know, a bit more mature, not having a great time on the Leopard bike. So, yeah, that's an interesting pick. I think they might have seen something in him, and he's probably desperate to get away from Leopard.
Unit is struggling from top to bottom.
Well, Dave spoke to Danny Kent, he's sort of made oblique references to issues. Mm-hmm. And you just think, come on, Stefan Kiefer is a very, very experienced team boss, you know, former rider himself. And he had an awful lot of success. I mean, look at last year, Moto3, but... yeah, something's not working out.
No, something's definitely not.
The wording on the MotoGP wing band, and this is courtesy of Crash.net, the devices or shapes protruding from the fairing or bodywork are not integrated into the body streamlining, for example, wings, fins, bulges, that may provide an aerodynamic effect, for example, providing downforce or disrupting aerodynamic wake, are not allowed. So that's for the ban for the wings next year. And they also say the technical director will be the sole judge of whether a device or fairing design falls into the above definition. If it is seen that people like maybe Ducati and Honda like to push the boundaries of the technical rules, you know, if they have a slightly strangely shaped fairing, the TD is just going to have to look at it and decide whether he thinks it's for aerodynamic reasons or other.
Yeah, because so, I know some people were thinking that they would just build the front ends like wings on an F1 car, and they've actually stomped that out with the, they said, furthermore, to avoid the front fairing is wing-shaped with unpredictable safety results, the front of the fairing cannot protrude more than 150 millimeters beyond a vertical line drawn through the front wheel spindle. And that should be noted that all fairings in current use already comply with that rule.
Yeah, I mean, 15 centimeters, that's quite a protrusion that it looks like they're going to allow. But yeah, interesting. It'll be interesting to see if people just go back to what we saw 2 or 3 years ago before the wings arrived, or if they do try and, you know, create a shape that's aerodynamic. I mean, everyone's wind tunnel is going to tell them the same thing.
Right. I mean, you would think it, you know, with the seems to be advantages gained this year, that someone's going to try to find the gray area in that rule and build some kind of downforce causing bodywork, but we will see.
In other news, crew chief silly season continues with there's a few bit of crews moving around, and Scott Redding's crew chief Giacomo Guidotti is leaving him next season. He's going across to Honda to work with Pedrosa. Redding's not happy with the move. To quote, I don't really know who I'm going to have. When you see all these people changing around, it leaves me with fuck all again. We'll see how it turns out over the next 2, 3, 4 races. And obviously that means that Pedrosa's current crew chief, Ramon Orin, is leaving. So he's going to Mark VDS and Jack Miller. And Miller's current crew chief, Christian Gabarini, is leaving to join Jorge Lorenzo at Ducati. So it's flipping musical chairs, you know, in amongst the mechanics.
Yeah, and that's going to be, what, 3 years and 3 different crew chiefs for Scott Redding. So that's definitely not helping his cause, especially with the season he's been having with all the technical difficulties. But then again, maybe that'll also lend a hand to getting rid of some of those technical difficulties. It's hard to tell.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, when Rossi got rid of Jerry Burgess, everyone was like, oh, that's the last desperate gamble of a fading start. Well, how wrong we all were. We really should have learned by now just to assume that anything Rossi does is going to be tinged with genius. And I mean, Jerry Burgess has said it himself. It's just one of those things that he just seemed to accept quite philosophically and said, yeah, can't say he made the wrong decision, can you?
right. And speaking of Rossi, his great and late friend Marco Simoncelli's number is going to be retired, or is retired officially this year in the MotoGP paddock, and only his family can give permission in the future for a rider to actually run that number. And that was a nice gesture from the MotoGP paddock.
Yeah, absolutely. And the Marco Simoncelli Foundation continues to do good work bringing through young riders and supporting them. Yeah, Paolo was at the press conference, and it was an interesting press conference because, you know, obviously we had the latest winners up there. Incredible season. But we'll come on to that.
Yeah.
First of all, of course, go on.
Oh no, I was thinking there was something else about. I think Paolo has set up. There's a foundation that they're, if I remember correctly from the conference, that. They're donating or opening up a hospital for disabled children, I believe.
That's right. Actually, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. That foundation's doing that as well. So they're doing a lot with that, and it's really nice to see such a give back from the motorcycle community.
I mean, there was a nice thing on MotoGP.com last week with remembering Showa Tomizawa, who we lost in the same season, and of course that was at Misano, or now the Marco Simoncelli circuit, and. You know, you still sometimes see people saying, you know, how come there's so much attention on Simoncelli compared to the other riders we've lost? And you think, well, one, he was in the MotoGP circuit and he was improving and looking like I don't think he'd have been a title winner in the future, although who can tell? But he certainly was looking like he was going to be a race winner. But also, he was just such a larger-than-life character. You got more quotes from Simoncelli in his few years there than anyone probably but Rossi. I mean, he was hilarious to listen to and very compelling character. So I think that's probably the reason. And, you know, his memory lives on, as they say.
Indeed. All right. Well, should we just get into it with the qualifying?
I think we should. Yeah.
All right.
Moto 3. Was another interesting up and down qualifying session, but surprise, surprise, topping out at the end of it was Brad Binder.
Yeah, surprise, surprise indeed. This guy has been on rails this entire year, and as we can see, that trend is going to continue later on when it comes to the race as well.
Yeah, absolutely. No great surprises. Enya Bastianini, who really is coming on strong, was second, and the front row made up by Nicola Belega, another really, you know, he's really come to the fore this season and shown what he can do. Jakob Kornfeil showing some good form. Jorge Navarro, Aaron Canet made up the second row with Ertl, Ono and Guevara the third, so on and so forth down. John McPhee after his recent win, way down in 29th. Fabio Quartararo still manages to confound the hot predictions for his form this season. He qualified 19th. Bo Bensnyder 21st. So and Juan Mir, worth noting, 16th. Qualified 16th.
Yeah, and in all fairness, John McPhee, the Mahindras in general were struggling mightily at the track this weekend. I think Jorge Martin was the only one that was in the top 15, or top 20 for that matter. Stefano Ganzi, the second fastest Mahindra. Oof. not a good, especially coming off of this recent success that Mahindra's had.
Yeah, obviously different circuits suit different styles of engine and chassis setup and everything, and yeah, it didn't seem to suit them very well. But the race itself got underway, and it was the usual bust up at the front at first, but it quite quickly spread into groups, and we ended up with Bastianini and Binder basically having broken clear, fighting each other, with a small group behind, from which we lost Jorge Navarro, crashed out again, and pretty much handed Brad Binder the championship. I mean, it's not automatically certain yet, but it's, well, we'll come on to the standings shortly. What I found fascinating, though, was I mean, Baliga was funny. It's like he had two settings on his bike. He had quick setting, and then let's drop back through the pack setting, and then no, let's charge up to the front again setting. Bit hot and cold.
But yeah, he took the lead there for a little while, and then he just charged through. We come from about fifth, and he took the first in about two laps or so, and then slowly trickled back and kind of went back and forth for a little while there. But yeah, I wonder if it was a fuel load versus tires and tires versus fuel load at the end. I'm not quite sure, but he definitely looked strong for a while there.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I thought he did a great job, but I think for me, other than obviously Brad Binder, who after having led Bastianini for a number of laps, allowed him past, I think, four laps to go, was that right? Something like that. Then Brad Binder just decided, no, I'm going to let you through, or maybe he didn't let him through, but certainly Bastianini got through, but he couldn't drop Binder, and Brad Binder stalked him and then pounced right on the last lap to take the win.
Oh, but that pass took some balls too. You can never say Brad doesn't have them. That was fast and it was tight.
It was on those fast right kink into the tough right hander when you got two left hands left.
Oh.
And that is, I mean, that Matt Burke was saying on the commentary, he said that is a flat out series of corners on a Moto 3 bike. You are absolutely pinned and you're like, oh, ow.
Yeah.
That's got to take some nuts. But what was really impressive, I thought, was Juan Mir. There were a few riders being told to drop places for exceeding the track limits, and the solid red paint, if you went onto it more than two or three times, then race direction would tell you to drop some places. Poor old Fabio Quartararo was in 18th and was told to drop six. And then they realized, no, he's actually already dropped the six places that he gained on the first lap, I think it was. So then that was rescinded and he was allowed to carry on. Didn't do much good. He still didn't finish very high.
No, his season continues to just disappoint. He's having a tough go.
Yeah. But Juan Mir got a drop one, having fought his way. He finished the first lap in 11th place, stayed there for a couple of laps, and was then just making steady, steady progress all the way up till he was pinned on the back of the leading group. And then he picked up a drop one place. Now, thankfully for him, Baliga was still with him, so he didn't have to drop an enormous distance back. But he really worked it out well, and he let him through at the end of the home straight. So going into turn one, he let him pass. By turn three, he was back past him again, I think. It was just really, really mature, clever riding, and picked up a lot of praise from the commentators. So I thought, no, hats off to young Juan Mir, who came in third and picked up his second or third podium? I can't remember. Baliga just missing out, but Bastianini and Binder were definitely the standouts right at the front. They couldn't really be caught. Mir was 1.5 seconds behind him. It looked at one stage he was catching them, but he ran out of laps. Brad Binder, 229. Bastianini takes over from Jorge Navarro in second place on 123. He's 106 points behind, and there are some races left to go. I'm trying to think. We've got Aragon, three flat. We've got five races left, haven't we? Oh, my goodness.
Five or is it six? I think it is. I think it's five left. That's it. Oof. It's kind of a good
Yeah,
unset thing.
we've got Aragon, then the three flyaways in Motegi, Phillip Island, and Sepang, and then back for Valencia.
Yeah. Yep.
So, pretty much bad. Brad Binder's got to DNF the next four races. I think I'm right in saying if he comes away from Aragon with at least that, well, yeah, of course, with at least a 100-point lead, then that's it. He'll probably, from what we've seen of Brad Binder this season, he'll probably pick up the title at the next race, which is pretty extraordinary.
He just got to finish ahead of those guys somewhere in the pack, so he didn't even have to win it, and he'll take the championship.
No, absolutely incredible. So then we went on to Moto2, where Johann Zarco had so much pace all weekend, up to and including QP. But so did Taka Nakagami. We should really get Harry to drop Dave's voice in saying it, because he does love to say Taka Nakagami.
He sure does.
And Lorenzo Baldessari was the third rider on the front row. Sam Lowes was fourth. Franco Morbidelli continuing to show well, fifth, and Tom Luthi, sixth. Bit of a resurgence in Luthi in the recent races.
Yeah,
Good to
he's doing
see.
good. That's definitely it's nice, especially after that big crash he had in, was it Brno? And
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
right
I
for
mean, it looked.
himself pretty good.
Then we had Sandro Cortese was seventh. Alex Rins, middle of the third row, still, we believed, suffering from the recent broken collarbone. And Mattia Bassini made up the third row. So it pretty much gone according to script on the qualifying. And then we got to the race, and I don't know what happened to Zarco. He led the first, he pushed his way to the, got his way to the front, or held his place at the front, led the first three laps, and then just dropped back.
Oh,
And was getting.
he got beat up through. He got
Yeah.
knocked around by five or six bikes, and then he just sit back there in about what, seventh place for a while.
Yep. And there was some really, really good, exciting riding going on in that leading pack. Sam Lowes was like on the edge from the start, and unfortunately he'd eventually tipple over the edge, just lost the front. And Takanakagami didn't start quite as well as he'd have hoped, and he was sort of at the back of the leading seven or eight for a while, but slowly started making his way forward. Alex Rins charged to the front, and him and Baldessari were having a good old dust up, a really good old dust up, at the very front of the entire race, for the rest of the entire race. I mean, it those two were, you know, Rins was leading, and you could see that Baldessari was close to him. But there's always that question, isn't it? Is he riding at 100% just to stay that close, or has he got something in reserve?
And when he did catch up to him, it looked like he was just riding to keep something in reserve, because he started every time Baldessari put in a fast lap, then Rins would put in a fast lap, then Baldessari put in a fast lap, and it was kind of going back and forth. And like they always say, it's one thing to catch, but it's another thing to pass. And it wasn't look like Baldessari had it, but then he definitely found that edge he needed to get Rins, and then Rins, of course, running wide in the, what was it, the penultimate turn there, or a couple turns back, that pretty much handed the win over to Baldessari. But it was so close. Rins almost tagged the back of him going into that fast right-hander. But
Yeah.
yeah, that was
Yeah.
a close finish, and good on Rins. I mean, was it, he's less than a month removed from that broken collarbone, and
Yeah, and I think everyone was waiting for the fatigue and the pain and the lack of function to catch up with him and watch him slowly dropping back, and he didn't. He just kept going and going. So, you know, tremendous finish by Alex Rins. Couldn't quite, I mean, he was desperately trying to get past Baldessari. And as you said, Scarlier, yeah, just nearly tagged him, had to run wide, but in a safe second. Nakagami was another 3.5 seconds behind Rins, six off the leader, came in to complete the podium. And Zarco managed to come in fourth, which at one stage looked like he might be get swallowed and end up down in double figures. Morbidelli was fifth. Tom Luthi was sixth, which pushes Tom Luthi up into third place in the championship, 4 points ahead of Sam Lowes. But In the title standings, Zarco is now leading Rins by 3 points.
Yeah, he's lost 31 points over the last, I think, 3 rounds to Rins, which, when's the last time Zarco was bothered by anybody in the championship? I mean, you have to go back early in the season, maybe back in about the 6th race when it was still this close.
Yeah.
And it's on now.
We've got if we look at last year, which was Zarco's championship year at Aragon, Rins came second to Tito Rabat, and Zarco was 6th. Now, I can't actually remember that much about the Moto2 race from last year, but maybe Alex Rins might be not only catching, but overtaking when we get to the next race in 2 weeks' time. It's going to be interesting.
It will be interesting. I'd be glad to see that championship go down to the wire, considering the other two seem to be so far gone already.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Then we moved on to... Yeah, sorry. So the standings. Zarco's on 194, Rins on 191. 53 points behind Zarco is Tom Luthi in third. So it is very much looking like it's going to be a Rins and Zarco shootout to the end of the season, although there's plenty of people who mathematically could still win. Yeah, even Dominic Agata, who's in 10th, could still mathematically win, although everyone ahead of him would have to DNF the next 5 races, so it's unlikely.
Do you know if Dominic's going to be back for the next round? Because he was still being filled in. I can't remember the guy's name. He's the real young kid, like the 16-year-old from the Spanish Championship. He was filling in for Agata again. I'm not sure if he's going to be back in time for Aragon.
No, you're right. I'm trying to think. It was mentioned this weekend, and I'm not sure if they said he was there watching, expecting to come back, or if they had news he would be coming back. But it's that thing of, look, the season's gone away, just make sure you're fixed before you come back.
Absolutely.
Then we went to MotoGP. Q1 was bloody tight. Alvaro Bautista, who had already gone through on the Aprilia straight through to Q2, and at one stage it looked like he was going to be joined by Stefan Bradl's teammate, who got pipped in the end by Michele Pirro and Hector Barbera. Alex Lowe's 4th in Q1. You know, Alex Lowe's has been absolute demon on that bike. If things shouldn't work out next season with the two new Zarco and Folger coming up to Tech Trois, there's a Yamaha Superbike rider, I think, might have raised a few eyebrows with his performance over the last couple of races. Just tremendous to see. Brilliant.
Yeah, so he's definitely brought some good attention to himself. And Yamaha's got a very good platform in the World Superbike to make the jump. We've seen, Ben Spies and Cal Crutchlow both come from that program to the Tech Trois. So it's definitely, I'm sure, something they will keep an eye on. But he needs to also worry about his teammate for next year on that same squad with Michael Vandermark being there too. So hopefully, Alex, he's going to do a few more. He's going to do Aragon too. So
yeah,
he's got a few more chances to shine.
I think the ones he'll miss out on, hopefully, because Bradley Smith is back and fit, but I think he's certainly going to miss the flyaways, even if he were still required, just because he's got the World Superbike season to finish off. And the travelling will probably be prohibitive, even though there aren't any clashes anymore. Lorenzo topped Q2 in the end, with Rossi second, Vinales third, Marquez Pirro, the leading Ducati, and Dovizioso was row 2, Cal Crutchlow, Danny Pedrosa, Aleix Espargaró row 3, with Pol, Hector Barbera, and Alvaro Bautista making up row 4. And
at this point in the weekend, at this point of the weekend, it was looking like Lorenzo was going to decimate everyone. He set the fastest lap ever on two wheels on the circuit with a 131.8, and was even for Lorenzo, he looked out of control on the track. He didn't look smooth. He looked like he was pushing.
Yeah, but in warm up, he was only 5th, a third of a second away from Marquez, Rossi, Pirro again, brilliant display with Dovi 4th on the warm up, which possibly raised a couple of eyebrows. But then we got to the race itself, and it was really, really bloody good. It really was. Lorenzo led initially, and then Rossi came past. But the really entertaining action was happening just behind them. I mean, Rossi led a lot of laps, and Lorenzo just couldn't close the gap. But the two of them were fairly secure with Marquez behind. But then we had Dovi dusting up with them. Vinales and Dovi had a good little battle of their own. But coming from sixth by the end of the first lap was number 26, Danny Pedrosa. He just got better and better and better as the race went on. It was one of those races. It wasn't turn by turn exciting, but compressed into a single entity, the race itself was dramatic.
Yeah, it was fantastic. Like you said, there was the point when Rossi got out front and he was maintaining the gap to Lorenzo. It was starting to look like it was going to be one of those races that Misano can throw up with whoever got out front first was just going to take it all the way to the end. And then Pedrosa, well, this is the Pedrosa we've been waiting for all season now, isn't it? He finally is starting to show.
This is last year's Aragon, you
Yeah.
know. It was just really, really impressive to see. I thought that Gary Shavert made a good point. Sorry, I met Gary at Valencia, and he actually told me it's Shavit. So sorry, I keep mispronouncing. Gary Shavit wrote in. He said, I've been following MotoGP for a long time now, and I remember another Spanish Pedrosa who used to win races all the time. Is this new guy related to him? Their styles are very different. The old one used to take off like a rocket and no one could catch him. But this one seems to be good at passing other riders. In any case, I was wondering if they're family. And I thought that was brilliant. And the passes he made, I mean, the pass on Marquez, you're thinking, come on, dude, this is the championship leader. You know, I'm thinking, come on, Danny, don't just sit behind him and do team orders, even though we don't have them in the merch. And he didn't. But the pass he put in was so clean and so precise. I think Marquez was like, what the? Hang on, that looked like a Repsol that just went past me. What's going on? You know, it was just really, really good. I mean, Lorenzo, he breezed past Lorenzo and then he sat behind Rossi for what, five laps, then went past and just, I wouldn't quite say pulled the pin, but, you know, he ended up nearly 3 seconds ahead and people just couldn't stay with him. It was
No.
really, really impressive.
No, it looked like, Rossi, when he gets past, he tends to fight back immediately. He couldn't. As soon as Pedrosa got past him, he sat behind him for a good couple corners, and then you already watched three bike lengths, four bike lengths, and then he was gone.
Yeah, it was really, really good. We had a few fallers. Alex Lowe's unfortunately crashed out. Javier Forres also crashed out. Bonaventure standing in for Loris Baz, and Aleix Espargaró crashed again.
Yeah.
Tito about finished, but five laps down. Tito had crashed, remounted, gone into the pits, come back out, and was just turning laps. Disappointing race for Scott Redding. Came in 15th, got a single point. But we had a standard sight that we've seen frequently over the last couple of seasons of a Repsol Honda rider on the podium with the two Movistar Yamaha riders. Only this time it wasn't Marquez, it was Pedrosa.
Right.
And you can imagine Marquez thinking, okay, you've gone past me. You need to now go past those two. And of course, Danny did. So, and it was just nice to see every other rider you saw was congratulating him. I just think he's a universally popular rider and bloody hell. And I think I heard Julian Ryder saying he is now statistically the most successful rider who has never yet won a world title.
That would seem probably more than likely to be accurate. He
And I,
even
yeah,
Lorenzo
go on.
came over and gave him a hug and a pat in the back, and those guys, from back in the 250 day, were definitely not friends. And you can tell that there's this everyone feels Danny's struggle as of late in the paddock, and to see that weight come off their shoulders, it's good to see everyone going over giving respects to him.
Do you remember the King of Spain? I think it was at Jerez, forced Lorenzo and Pedrosa to shake hands one year,
That's right.
many years ago. But and now I didn't see the because again, real life getting in the way. I didn't see the post-race press conference. But
Oh,
apparently,
yes.
did you see this?
I
What was going on
did
there?
see it. So, one of the reporters asked Lorenzo what he thought of Rossi's move. Rossi had that hard but fair pass. It was about lap four on Lorenzo to take the lead. And yeah. Lorenzo came across and he said, in my opinion, it was hard and unnecessary because he was faster than me and that he could have come by later on. And Rossi's reaction was a bit of a laugh. And Lorenzo turned to him and said, don't laugh. It's my opinion. And then Rossi said, well, your opinion's wrong. And then they got into a bit of a spat back and forth about, well, it was a shame because once again, Pedrosa's win is overshadowed by two people bickering from a rough pass on the track. You serve back to Pedrosa's last win in Sepang. I think everybody remembers there might have been two riders on the track that had a bit of a run-in that overshadowed his win there as well, with Rossi and Marquez. So it was more funny than serious. Rossi was having a good laugh, and Lorenzo was looking over him like a child scorned, but it was kind of funny.
Yeah, it's an individual sport. They're going to have massive egos. They want everything in their favor. It's just, you look at it and you cringe sometimes, don't you? Pragmatically, on form, I don't think it's likely that Danny Pedrosa is going to win a title. I tipped him as my outside shot for this season, and it hasn't gone very well. But emotionally, you just love to see him put these three back in their boxes and say, hey, you can do it, and just be quiet and go about your business. Although, maybe if Danny was a proper title contender towards the end, we'd see that sort of petulance coming out in him. Maybe it's easy to be relaxed when he's now fourth in the championship again.
Right, the pressure's off you, the second guy on the team. Getting a win was the big pressure. Now that that's gone, he may even do better. And, even better for that Danny won that. That's our eighth different winner for the season. I don't even know where to begin on how magical the season's been and how unpredictable it has been this year. It's been amazing.
No. I know. It is absolutely ridiculous. We had what did we get? We had Pedrosa one this time. Last time out, of course, it was Vinales. The race before that was Crutchlow. So that's three out of three. The race before that was Iannone. The race before that was Marquez. The race before that was Mr. Miller. I'm having to scroll down to the lower reaches of the rider performance, because obviously it's listing title run, and Jack wasn't running this weekend due to the injuries. Before that was Valentino, before that was Lorenzo, and Lorenzo before that. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 winner in 8 races. The last 8 races have each had a different winner. That is just incredible.
Yeah, and if I remember correctly, they were saying the stat for that the last time there was this many winners in MotoGP was 1988, if I remember I heard that correctly. I may have gotten that wrong, but I remember kind of breezing past that somewhere.
Well, we've never had 8 different consecutive race winners. In consecutive races, we've never had, since it started, it's never ever happened before. So this is a historic season. It is definitely the best season ever, although next season we'll top it again. I tell you what, if it does. And of course, Aragon. We're going to Aragon next. Danny likes it. He's done well there in the past. I'm trying to think. Last year was that brilliant dust up with Rossi, wasn't it? When he Rossied Rossi and came second. Lorenzo was 2.5 seconds down the road. It's going to be really interesting, I think. And then Danny does well at the flyaways often, if his throttle doesn't stick and he doesn't crash at PI.
He does do good on the flyaways. He does come well last year for sure. He came good at the end of the season, and that's why we all thought he was gonna continue form at the beginning of this season. And unfortunately, he struggled quite a bit, and I'm sure the change in tires and all that haven't helped him. And maybe he's now figured out, because he was the only one that was able to run the soft tire this weekend. And even Cal Crutchlow was saying that he wishes he had stuck with the soft tire, but he was looking around and seeing the guys in the mediums and decided that, was that the last race? Maybe I'm getting myself confused, but yeah, he's the only one that ran that soft, and obviously it paid off because he weighs nothing compared to the rest of the guys. He's the lightest guy in the field, so he can run that without overheating it.
Yeah, exactly. On the championship standings, we've got Rossi is 43 points behind Marquez. Marquez on 223, Rossi on 180. A further 18 points behind him is Lorenzo, 162. So Lorenzo's 61 points behind Marquez. More than two race wins with Marquez DNFing. I think it's gone away for all of them, because Marquez is boxing clever this season. Only 17 points behind Lorenzo is Danny Pedrosa, who is now 9 points ahead of Maverick Vinales, having leapfrogged him. And then we're down into Dovizioso 99, Iannone 96. Andrea Iannone's season's not going very well after that race win. He crashed early in the weekend. He's fractured D3 vertebrae, which is not a horrendously critical one, if you can describe any vertebrae as not critical. And he still went for a fitness test on Saturday morning, hoping the doctors would say, yeah, carry on. And these people are a different breed. They really are. But no, he was told, no, you're not going to race. Hopefully he should be back, because, you know, cracked vertebrae, a couple of weeks, he'll be fine. He should be back for Aragon.
Season's kind of taking its toll on people here lately, with Baz, Iannone, and of course Jack Miller also having a fractured back, and a fractured hand as well kept him out of this race. So
yeah, absolutely. So then we, I think that's a wrap up on MotoGP. So, in 10 days' time, by the time you guys hear this, it will be the Aragon race. Before that, we've got World Superbikes return at the Lausitz Ring, which is a new track. So that's going to be interesting this weekend, especially for those people trying to pick an effective MCN fantasy team. goodness knows, don't know what to do. But we had a BSB triple header. And I'm afraid neither Skyler nor myself have managed to see this, but we do know what happened. Basically, Leon Haslam just won everything. He blitzed the three races. Shaky Byrne had a pretty torrid weekend. I think he crashed, remounted, finished ninth in race one. I think he crashed and failed to remount in. Hang on, what am I looking at here?
Yeah, race two, he didn't make it back. He was out.
Yeah. And then the third race, I think Shaky was fifth. So in the standings.
Well, the reason why Shaky had such a terrible weekend, because he's on my team and I'm trying to catch Lynn. So I guess Lynn maybe put in the call to slow down the point gathering.
Yeah, I also had Haslam and Byrne in my fantasy team. So nice one, Leon. Shaky, pull your finger out. but interestingly, Leon Haslam has actually overtaken Shaky Byrne as we go into what's now the showdown by 3 points. So what's going to happen now? The top six are going into the showdown. So everyone else is now sadly irrelevant. Leon Haslam will start on 546 points. Shaky on 543. Jason O'Halloran on 513, tied with James Ellison, also on 513. Dan Linfoot, 511. And Luke Mossy, who managed to get into the showdown right at the last gasp, 506. We've done it a lot of years. What would the championship look like if we didn't do this showdown and just carried on? I don't know if I've got the energy. It was a shame that Michael Laverty just missed out. Good rider, like the guy. Would have been nice to have seen Michael Laverty up in the showdown, but he just missed out, along with Peter Hickman and Richard Cooper, Tommy Bridewell, Christian Eden, and others who'd been fighting there or thereabouts and hasn't got through. So we've got there at Donington next, which is next weekend. Then 2 weeks after that, they go to Assen, and then finally they finish off mid-October at Brands Hatch. UK in mid-October could snow. Anything could happen. So.
It looks like Leon's coming good at the right time. He's going to be tough to beat. You know, he's got a full head of steam. The Cowie's working good. They've got a lot of support behind that bike too, from what I understand.
And of course, it's Donington next, where his dad has run a race school for many years with a brief trip down to Silverstone for a couple. I mean, he knows that track probably better than anyone, barring his dad, on the planet. I mean, it's his playground. It's where he just went and used to turn laps for fun in between race weekends. He's going to be tough to beat there, definitely. Yeah. Now, there was also Race America, but I think you and Scott, Moto America, I think you and Scott are going to do a season roundup on that in the coming weeks. Is that correct?
Yeah, we're going to do a season roundup on that. I'll just go over a couple quick results here. We won't go too much into detail, but Cameron Brobier, he is the two-time Moto America champion. He's actually the only Moto America Superbike champ. So congrats to Cam. Roger Hayden got his second race win of the season. I believe that was in the first race, followed by Josh Hayes and Tony Elias. And in the second race, it was Tony Elias, Roger Hayden, and Josh Hayes on the podium. Then we're going to go Super Sport. JD Beach did the double, getting first race, but unfortunately, it was not enough to catch his teammate for the championship. I think he lost by about 4 points to Garrett Gerloff, who is this year's 2016 Moto America Super Sport champion. So congratulations to Cameron Beaubier and Garrett Gerloff on their championships. Also to Josh Herron in Superstock 1000. And I believe it was Joe Roberts had the Stock 600, but I'll have to double check on that. But once again, like Martin said, myself and Scott Bolton will be doing a review show where we can get our Americanisms and cheeseburger talk all hour long. You can listen to that. So I'm sure that'll be a good one a little later on in the coming weeks.
Yeah. Now to the most important part of the show, where we bow before the magnificence that is Shot Hole Racing, CLLFC, and Craig Lowe still sitting proud at the top. Craig is on 2,589 points. He's just done really, really well. He is fifth overall. Fifth. 19,994 people are playing this fantasy game, and Craig is fifth. That is just fantastic. Really chuffed for him. I've just somehow managed to come. Oh, there it is. In second place is Ben Fetterplace with team BF8. But Ben's 2,434, so he's 155 points behind. It's going to take some catching. Stuart Nibbs remains third, only 11 points behind Ben with Nibbs's knee sliders. And then going down to the hosts, I'm strangely managing to remain fairly respectable in 17th with 2,173. And the next host is Scott, who's down in 111th place, Team Motordog on 1,276. So I think I might end up topping the host charts. Harry has been run down by Dave. Harry's 130th with 1205. Dave is only two places behind him, although he's on 1181. So he's got 24 places behind Harry. And then Len is being respectable. He's 174th now with 846 points. And unless you're in under an assumed name, Skyler, I can't find you in our league.
Yeah, no, I wanted to join the league, but I think it's I haven't gotten added yet to that. I put the password and stuff in, so we'll figure that out after the show or something. But yeah, I definitely signed up. I've been getting my updates. I can actually probably check my email real quick, and I can tell you where my points are at. Or we can just wait till next show if this is going to take forever. We'll figure it out. We'll figure it out for the next one, and we'll have it all updated to see if I'm going to be able to close Lynn in the coming end of the season here.
Absolutely. So, looking forward, we have got... Oh, I've got a little parish notice. Last time, in fact, I was on, I think, was when I was on with you, Skyler, for your introduction show.
That's right.
And I mentioned that at the end of the season, I'm going to be taking a step back. I will still be covering tests and races out in Qatar, but week to week, I won't be on. And I don't think I ever got around to actually explain the reason why. Partly it's after 7 years, you know, I want to go back to watching races as a fan, not thinking about talking points. But what I'm going to be doing is watching movies for talking points, because I'm starting a new podcast with a couple of other friends out here. And we're going to be looking at history as portrayed by the movies. So we're not just going to diss the movies and say Hollywood and say, oh, they lie, because often there are very good narrative and cinematographic reasons for the fact that they alter a story or change a story. But if you've ever watched a movie and thought, God, I didn't know that, I wonder how much of that is true. You know, this will be movies based on true events or based on real, supposedly real people. Then we're going to drill down and give a bit of truth. And we're looking to roll out in January. It's going to be called History by Hollywood. And by then we should have a website and everything, and particularly for Gary Shavit, because Gary and I have talked about history podcasts before. So we're going to start, we're going to try and do a big range. It's not just going to be, you know, World War II films or anything. We're looking at, in our early ones, probably Gladiator will start because it's quite a big mainstream film, but we'll look at Titanic, Amadeus. I don't know much about Mozart's actual life other than he was pretty good at writing music, apparently, and that sort of thing, you know. So, yeah, so hopefully we'll pick up some listeners who have a historical or a cinema interest from Motopod to come across to us.
That sounds like a wonderful project you got going on there. I'll definitely be giving that a listen. That's quite an interesting take.
Yeah, just talking about reaching us, we've got Skylar on Twitter is at SkylarV28. That's capital S and a capital V. So Skylar V number 2, number 8. Harry is at HLPhotoGP. The HL and the GP are in capitals. Dave is at Dave Neal, nice and easy, all lowercase. Martin is at MotopodMartin, all lowercase. Len is at MotoLen. This is all Twitter. And Scott Bolton is at MotoDog650. Those are numbers at the end. So looking forward, what we got next? We've got Lausitz Ring next weekend, or this coming weekend, World Superbikes. And we've got Donington Park over the same weekend. We've got then the Aragon MotoGP, September the 23rd to 25th, the race on the 25th, before the flyaways, which then go bang, bang, bang. We get a bit of a break, actually. We get a three-week break to the Japanese Grand Prix, and then it's Japanese a week later, the Australian a week later, the Malaysian. 2 weeks later, Valencia, season wraps up. Best season ever. Oh my God, what are we going to do in the off-season? Boo-hoo.
Boo-hoo. It's
going to be and tough. Don't forget, if you prefer email to Twitter, you can just write to motopod@motopodcast.com. That will go to all the hosts. We think there's been a bit of a hitch with Skylar receiving those, but we're going to get that sorted. So you'll be able to, that goes to Jules, Dave, Harry, me, and Skylar, and Scott. Link. And so if you want to address one particular host, just open with, you know, Martin, you're a dickhead, and you get everything wrong, or whatever you want to say. Yeah, Martin, if you ever come to America, we're going to drown you in a massive vat of melted cheese, you know, sarcastic, limey bastard.
The cheese.
Incidentally, I've been watching a series called Turn, based on a book called Washington Spies, and it's set in the, during the American War of Independence. And it may not come as a surprise. I was actually rooting for the Americans because they're the goodies in it. And there's some decent British people. Oh, no, that's right. The Americans hanged them. but there's some very nasty, there's a particularly very nasty, almost pantomime villain British officer character. And yes, I'd like to punch him in the face as well. So, no, it's very good, actually. Oh, recommend it.
Good. Donations. Have we mentioned that? Oh,
yeah, the fact that we don't know if there are any new ones, but we'll cover that next week.
Or people can go to the page if they... you can head to motopodcast.com and scroll down your left. There's some links there if you would like to donate to the page. You can also set up a subscription that reoccurs every month. It helps us pay for such things as MotoGP subscriptions, the .com subscriptions. It gets
bandwidth.
Go ahead. Oh, yeah, bandwidth.
Yeah.
And gets guys to the races and gets those lovely interviews that we love so much. And the guys did a great job on getting, especially on last week's show, they were fantastic. I got to listen to those today. And that Eugene Laverty, if you haven't listened to last week's show and caught the interviews with Eugene Laverty especially and how upset he was, you got a bit of a true statement from a guy who maybe is a little more truthful since he's leaving MotoGP about what happened to him in qualifying. Make sure, if any of them, you go listen to his.
Yeah. I haven't heard it yet. Sorry.
Oh, yeah. No, you need to give that one a listen.
So. I've currently lost my iPod, so I'm having to borrow Sharon's.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's a bit annoying. But hey ho, there you go. Right, I'm not quite. I've got a horrible feeling that I think we might have produced a bit of an inadequate show because we've just covered 9 races, and it's bloody hell, less than an hour.
I'm not up on my banter yet. I'm just doing spot fills and covering it. We'll get more talking in next time, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're both a little rusty.
Yeah. Anyway, hope everybody has enjoyed it. And we are going to be back soon. Next week we'll be back. We'll be talking about World Superbikes and looking forward to Aragon. And probably in the next coming weeks or during the break between Aragon and the Flyaway, we'll just wrap up silly season and confirm, you know, everything that has happened and anything that is yet to happen.
Well, I think that about does it for me.
Certainly does. Okay, thanks ever so much, everybody, and we will speak to you again next week.
See you, everybody.
Bye. Thank you.